Welcome to Pining for Penny Pod. I'm Heather.
And I'm Emily. This is a fan podcast to summarize, discuss, and dissect the whole Armand Gamache mystery series by Louise Penny. We are going book by book in the order they were written, just a few chapters at a time.
And most importantly, we're here to enjoy some wine, scotch, beer, cafe au lait, tea, and pretty much any food described in the novels.
Disclaimers, we may have some spoilers for future books, but we will do our best to not ruin any big things. Also, and this is very important, we are not Francophones, nor are we Canadian.
No, actually, we are recording this podcast from lovely Houston, Texas, so please excuse our French.
I started tracking my weight and my food intake with my Fitness Pal today.
Today, okay.
I did great until now.
Oh, shit. You can't count. I mean, you can't even count this. Yeah, there's no way. So I started recording. I'll cut that out, obviously. Or we can keep it in.
No, keep it in. Why not?
Guys, I can't wait for you to see. We're finally doing French-Canadian dessert, aka a bowl of cheese.
A bowl of cheese.
And chocolate. That's what they usually have. It's like a bowl of cheese. And I'm like,
gotcha.
Now, we're having a snack plate. I mean, I guess we're starting with the food, because I feel like it's appropriate. We're going to be snacking along this entire time. So we have three cheeses. We have a goat cheese with like a fig and almond topping.
Yep.
We have a white cheddar, and we have the ever famous Stilton cheese, but it's a mango ginger one. So it's kind of sweet, which I think is nice because it cuts the other strong, the
heavy Stilton.
All right, what else we have?
There's fresh strawberries, truffles,
which, by the way, are imported from the second best place they could have been imported from. Obviously, the first best place would have been Canada, but these were imported from France. We thought that was second best.
Second best. some chocolate-covered strawberries that Heather made, multigrain crackers. And then some really cute, I think that's French.
Yeah, right? these are...
The little French jeans.
These are actually from France, yeah. The Bon Maman.
Bon Maman?
Maman? Bon Maman? Little marmalades, little jams. So, yeah.
And some Pinot Noir.
And we are sipping on some Pinot Noir. As you'll see very soon, there's a lot of food and a lot of drinking.
Oh, my goodness.
Because guess what? We're going on vacation this book. Whew, I'm so excited. Yes. We're going to a hotel. We're going
to be destination. Relaxing.
Yes, we are finally out of Three Pines, which is sad but exciting. So we thought this would be a good little snack plate to kick it up.
And I'm going to be eating my face off.
Yes, and also we did not want to cook any fancy meals because...
No. But I do want to cook that one meal that we'll get to.
We will get to that. Yeah. Okay. So let's start with our That's a French-ass name segment where these Anglophones will attempt to speak French. Wow. There's a lot of French in these books. It is like increased exponentially.
Yeah. We should basically be able to speak French by the end of this book.
We should be able to. Not going to guarantee that actually happens. I've had some help. I'm feeling okay about some of these words. We'll see how they come out of my mouth. There's a lot, so we're going to go fast. But the first one is actually the name of the hotel that we're at. Probably important to know how to say it, but it's the Manoir Bellechasse.
Manoir Bellechasse.
Yes.
Got it.
And it happens to be an auberge. Auberge.
Auberge.
Which is a hotel.
Okay.
So.
Auberge.
Auberge.
And that kind of reminds me of the... Is it... Eggplant.
Oh, aubergine?
Aubergine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Auberge.
Oh, yeah. Auberge. Wonder.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know what this means. Votre le glace, which means something about your ice. Probably it's really hot at the hotel right now, so they must be talking about ice or ice cream or something like that. Votre, with, you know, with the cool R.
Votre. No, that, no.
Didn't happen. It's no. Okay. We'll move on. We don't need to do that. the next one is really nice because it's a phrase that we can use, you know, if we want to speak French at some point.
Yeah.
But it's, quel plaisir.
Quel plaisir.
Quel plaisir means what a pleasure.
Quel plaisir.
Ooh. I think that was fancy.
Thank you.
That was a good one.
Stared off into space for that one.
What were you imagining?
Maybe being in Paris.
Being in Paris, yeah. Or maybe being at the Manoir Bellechasse. Mm-hmm. So the next one is soigner.
Oh, yep. Soigner.
And I tried to look it up, but it was a little bit confusing, but something that I clicked on, who knows how legit it is, because it could be very unlegit.
Sure.
But it said, like, dressed with care and elegance. And that makes sense based on this book. Like, they would use that terminology in this book, because we're talking about some fancy people here.
Sure.
So I feel like that's probably the meaning, but who knows?
And that also kind of sounds like soigner, be like suave,
yes.
You know, for...
And also like a soiree.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like a party. Fancy party.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it matches.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're eating. That's fine. Make as much noise as you want. I hope everyone that listens to this is eating while they're listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So, the next one is a very useful phrase for us. Except for if we were ever to speak French to anyone... We probably would be on the other end of this question. Because this question is, how can I help you? Which is, puis-je vous aider?
Puis-je vous aider?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Puis-je vous aider?
Aider. Yes, how can I help you? So I feel like someone would say that to me because I would look lost and confused.
Correct. So it's an important one that we know when someone says it to us.
Then we understand. Mm-hmm. That's very true. Okay. So we also have... Garçon.
Garçon.
Please come here, garçon. I'm hungry. It means waiter.
Garçon.
Okay, I really need to eat this cheese. Hold on.
It reminds me of Gaston. Gaston, yep.
From Belle.
Mm-hmm.
From Belle. From Beauty and the Beast, which is also supposed to be, right,
in
a French village. Okay, so the next one is... Je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi.
It's the one that I feel like we actually kind of know a little bit. We can pronounce. Je ne sais quoi. You got that certain je ne sais quoi.
Yes, I feel like it's definitely like an English thing to say that in French. You know what I mean? Like we would use that phrase.
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
Yeah, just like that. Yeah. Like definitely one of those phrases.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Moving along. Bonne idée.
Bonne idée. Bonnie day.
Yeah.
Bonnie day.
Good idea.
Bonnie day. Bonnie day. If you want to go to Ireland, I'll have a bonnie day. Bonnie day.
Bonnie day. Okay. I'm sorry, but this one's not going to come out right. I do apologize. Maître chez nous. Maître chez nous.
Maître chez nous.
Yep. Which means masters in our own home.
Master. That makes me think of Les Miserables.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Master of the house.
Master. Yep. Okay. Felicitations.
Felicitation.
Felicitation. Congratulations.
Yes.
And then, oh, God, this one's really hard to say, too. Verchère. What is that? What was that? Sound like Kermit the Frog?
That was so good.
That sounded like Kermit the Frog.
Like you had your tongue stuck in the back of your throat.
I
caught that.
All right.
I heard it.
Let's not do that again. Would you like to try?
Vesche.
Yeah, sure. All right. All right, last one.
Quel dommage.
Oh, quel dommage. What a pity.
What a pity.
That's another good one we can use for sure.
Quel dommage.
What a pity.
Ugh.
I feel like it's sarcastic, though.
Probably.
It's like, is it really a pity?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so be prepared for a lot of French in these upcoming episodes, and a lot of us absolutely butchering it.
Yep. I think we're getting better, though.
Okay, real quick.
Yeah.
Correction, which is really funny and really stupid at the same time.
Okay.
So, for you people who have been listening, I don't know who you are. My cousin, at least. For all of last book, we decided to call Agent Robert Agent Robert. Because we were like, guess what? His last name's hard to pronounce. We actually don't even really know how to pronounce it. Never mind actually have it come out of our mouths. Mm-hmm. So we just go with Robert because we thought that would be safe.
Uh-huh.
We were like, we can definitely say Robert properly. Now, my sister starts listening to the audiobook. Which, yay! So excited. Someone else is reading the books. Mm-hmm. My main goal with this is, like, get more people to read these books. Spread our love.
So she keeps writing them for forever.
Forever. Mm-hmm. She goes, oh, yeah, my favorite name, because, like, I love listening to it because there's French accents and I hear how they say their name. And my favorite name is Robert Lambert. And I was like, excuse me? His name's fucking Robert.
Robert.
Obviously.
I mean, that makes sense.
It makes perfect fucking sense. But here we are. Robert. Like, oh, we've got Robert. We could say that, right?
Yep.
So for the entire season, that guy's name was Robert. And his last name was Lemur.
Lemur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Robert. So that's according to the audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
But according to us, it was Robert.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, did we say which book we're reading? Oh, yeah. We did. We introduced it at the end of last book.
Do it now.
All right. So, friends, we are now on book number 4.
What?
This one is called A Rule Against Murder by Louise Penny. And, Heather already said that, you know, it's not in Three Pines. We're in a destination murder.
And we are going to do 7 chapters in this episode, and then 7 chapters in the next episode.
Yep.
And then after that, I believe we're doing 6 chapters each episode after that.
Correct.
Figured we would get the 7 chapter episodes done earlier on when the chapters are shorter.
Yes.
And there's less info.
Correct.
The craziness that happens at the end of all these books.
Right. And maybe that gets adjusted, because I feel like these chapters were also equally quite long.
So maybe all of yours were, and all of mine were short.
Oh, perfect.
So it's going to even out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had 4 chapters and you had 3, so I think it's actually even.
Okay.
Okay, so we actually had a prologue. And although I wasn't assigned the prologue, I assumed I should take care of it because I've had chapter 1.
Thank you.
And I was like, I feel like the prologue's kind of important. So I did want to do like a very, very fast summary.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts with a backstory of the Manoir Bellechasse.
Bellechasse?
Frick. I already forgot. Bellechasse.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about the robber barons who made money off of it. Mm-hmm. So, Emily, do you know what robber barons are?
Yeah, they were back in, like, the 1920s, and they were people that went into an area and they bought up stuff and
made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I did not
quite the carpetbaggers.
Yeah, I didn't know what this term
robber barons. Oh, but that's, like, Carnegie and Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just, like, the super...
Yep. Super rich people.
Yeah.
So they made a crap ton of money basically by monopolizing huge industries and usually in very unethical or exploitative ways. So you can imagine where this place is.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably on land, or why am I saying probably? It's on land that was home to indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. These robber barons discovered the lake that's there, and I don't want to say it wrong, but Massawippi, maybe? Lac, which means lake.
Mm-hmm.
Massawippi. They basically started chopping down trees. They built this great remote lodge with a fancy copper roof, which sounds,
I bet it sounds beautiful.
Really beautiful.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the book, she says, it was created for the robber barons to kill. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually the indigenous people there, the Abenaki, they used to work at the lodge. So they were employed and stuff, but they got turned off by what was going on there. So they left the area, mm-hmm. which is obviously sad because they're, again, pushed out of their own home. And then it was passed down year and year and eventually got abandoned. And then finally, in the more recent times, someone bought it, fixed it up, and turned it into one of the finest auberges. I don't know how to say the plural form of auberge. That's way too advanced for me. Sorry, only singular nouns. In Quebec. And now a century later, the robber barons were back.
They are.
Yeah. So that's the backstory.
So we say that that happened in the 1900s, 1800s, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just recently, there was a news thing that came across my Instagram feed, which, mm-hmm. sorry to say, it's where most of my little news clips come from. But there is a state park in Texas, in Houston, that is being sold to be made into a gated community.
No.
Yep.
What park?
It's called Sheldon Lake State Park.
Dang it.
And, or wait, no, sorry. Fairfield Lake State Park is closing to make way for a gated community.
Man, that's such a bummer.
Yeah.
So, all right. That's the history. That's the premise. Let's get into our first weekly investigative report, where we summarize the chapters from this week's reading. So, starting with chapter one. At the very beginning, we actually do go to Three Pines. We start with a mailman. He's coming. I really love the perspective of, so that state park is, okay, so it's by Tyler and Plano. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Who needs to live there? Looks like there's not much.
No, but there's a big lake.
Oh, I get it. Lock.
Lock.
A lock. Okay, so mailman. Point of view. He loves delivering the mail to Three Pines because like I why wouldn't
this.
He?
Yes,
yes,
it's that's super like the cute. Best job ever.
Yeah, but he's there to deliver an ominous letter,
mm-hmm.
and that's all. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So the rest of the chapter is at the Manoir Bellechasse, where Ren Marie and Armand Gamache visit every summer since the first time little young Armand took Ren Marie there. Isn't that so cute? So they celebrate their anniversary every year.
Yeah.
He was trying to, like, you know, be all impressive back in the day. I'm going to take you this fancy auberge.
Did it at all kind of creep you out a little bit, like, knowing that your parents have sex when she alluded to the fact that Gamache and Ren Marie had physical relations for the first time there?
Yeah.
That was kind of cringy.
You were like,
I was like, I don't know.
You guys are like my parents. That's really good.
So.
They're in love.
Yeah, trivia tidbit. Where did Gamache and Ren Marie have their first
virginity? Well, I don't know if they lost their virginity, but
sure,
that was their first time. so upon checking in, Clementine, who is the receptionist, is very upset to tell them that they were assigned to a very small room at the back with no view. And of course, the Gamaches don't care. They're right. Like, we're just happy to be here. We're relaxing. We don't care. We understand, but she's all upset. But the reason is because the Finneys are here taking up all of the fancy rooms. And we're like, oh, the Finneys, who are they? But they sound very extra and rich and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll eventually come to learn more about this quirky, I'll call them, rich
can't
family.
Can't wait.
Over the next several days, the Gamaches relax. They get to know the other hotel guests, including the Finneys. They read books, play bridge, lay by the pool, and basically sweat it out in the heat. It's like mm-hmm. really, really hot and humid weekend. And we meet the maitre d'. He loves predicting the weather, apparently. And at the end of the chapter, he predicts that a storm is brewing.
Gotcha.
So that is the whole chapter. It was really fast, so I just want to do a really quick cast of characters to kind of just briefly describe. So for the Finneys, we have Bert and Irene, couple, elderly.
Okay.
By the way, this was confusing to me because we just watched the TV show and everyone was 30 years younger. 20 to 30 years younger. But the like, our Irene is, they're like in their 80s. Bert's like 90.
Mm-hmm.
They're really on the elderly side. And then we have Irene's children. Bert, by the way, is later married to Irene.
Correct.
So he is not the father to the children. So we have Thomas, who is the oldest, and his wife, Sandra. And then we have the sister, Juliet. Her last name is Martin because she married some rich dude.
Is it Martin?
Martin. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not even, I can't.
Robert.
I'm just always wrong. So Martin. If I start saying Martin, it's probably just Martin.
Who knows?
God. And then we have, so that's the next sister. And then we have Mariana, who is another sister, mm-hmm. and her child
yeah.
named Bean.
Yeah.
We do not know. The child is about 10 years old. We do not know anything else about the child. And then we have Spot and Claire, who we don't know who they are yet. So I'm correct. Not going to say because I want you know, yeah. there to be a surprise. So the whole family is there except Spot and Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And these are obviously, well, Spot is obviously a nickname, but we don't know who the other brother is. But they just keep talking about him in this, like, mysterious way and right. also this, like, negative way.
Right.
So the Gamaches are like, we don't want him to show. They're, like, nervous about him showing right. up because they're interested. This family is all so crazy. Like, he's going to be even worse. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. Then we have Chef Veronique. Veronique, mm-hmm. probably. Which she is described, like, so poorly by Louise Penny. She's, like, her every time she describes her, like, fat sausage fingers and, like... Oh. But she has, like, the best personality. Yeah. I love her. Then we have Pierre Patinon. He's the maitre d'. And we have Elliot, mm-hmm. who is basically a young new hotel worker who Pierre is a little skeptical of.
Right.
And then we have Clementine Dubois, who's the receptionist.
Okay.
There's also some bitch named Colleen. Is she... I know she's a worker, but, like, oh. is she, like, a gardener?
I think she's the gardener.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll see. All right, so we've done our summary. That was chapter one. That's our introduction to the characters. Okay. Time for our quick quote corner, where we highlight our favorite quotes from the chapter we just reviewed. So just a real quick one about Sandra. Gamache was thinking, funny how dyed hair, heavy makeup, and young clothes actually make a person look older.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously depends, but right. there's definitely like that very clear type of person who's trying too hard.
Yeah.
And well, it just makes you look older sometimes.
Yeah. I, you know, sometimes like foundation, it just settles into creases.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then your creases get like,
or it like dries out your skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially like a liquid one.
Correct.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. it can emphasize yes, your
the part that you are trying to
cover. So Thomas and, so Sandra is like, no one likes her. She is so extra. She's so mean, mm-hmm. and she's so self-centered. Yep. And apparently, though, they are like in their 60s.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm getting the show confused yeah. with my images of these people.
Exactly. These people do not look like, right. I don't know why they did that, but they're like in their 60s.
Yeah.
So, okay. And then let's finally get into our bistro brief, mm-hmm. where we discuss our favorite foods consumed, how likely we are to eat them, and what we're currently eating, drinking right now, which we already discussed. Yeah. However,
so good.
In this chapter, the only thing that was mentioned was the mailman. He was longing for a cold beer and a sandwich and a chat with with Olivier. But he couldn't because he had to deliver this ominous letter.
Ugh, yeah. Stupid work.
Bah-bah.
Always getting in the way of fun.
Ugh.
When does it end? Never. Okay, chapter two, mm-hmm. weekly investigative report. So in this chapter, this was delicious chapter.
Oh yes,
So Gamache and Remarie, they're at the hotel. They're sitting down for what sounds like the most heavenly meal, and they are discussing the what's of what's happening in their life. You know, there's stuff that's going on with Daniel and Annie.
Their kids.
Their kids, correct. And Renmarie kind of drops this little bit of a bomb at dinner, and she tells Gamache that their son and daughter-in-law, they've chosen a name for their child, and if it's a boy, they want to call him Henri?
I think it's Henri.
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 Henri. We don't know anything else about this, but it upsets Gamache.
Deeply.
Yep. And we don't know why, but Renmarie feels like she needs to tell him and, like, start preparing him that there could potentially be a child in his life named Henri.
Okay. We'll find out.
Yep. So they finish up their dinner. Gamache, because he just ate a sumptuous meal, needs to go take a little walk around the premises.
Same.
Always. So he takes a walk and he finds...
Whoa, hello.
This is good that I get to talk for a minute because I will just keep eating that cheese.
Okay, I'll eat now.
So Gamache takes a walk. He finds Julia out in the gardens having a cigarette, which is kind of like a... She's not supposed to be smoking because, you know, her family is all to do. But they're having somewhat of a, like a getting to know you intimate conversation.
Gamache and, is it Julia or Juliet?
Oh, I don't know.
I messed that up. I'll look it up while you.
Okay. So they're getting to have, getting to know you conversation, and she's discussing some of the difficulties of growing up in her family. And, we also learn through this conversation that her ex-husband is now in jail for a financial fraud scheme, mm-hmm. which, yeah, that's always sad. Like, does she end up with any money? Or, but she apparently, you know, people appreciated how she handled the situation, you know? Just, it's crappy.
It is.
Yeah. It's really awful. And then towards the end of the conversation, she alludes to the fact that her brother and his wife are supposed to arrive tomorrow, and Gamache is just struck by how neutral and maybe even a bit dreadful sounding that remark was. So coming up with the spot that is just like, yes, this person is coming, and she does not sound excited about it.
It's so. Julia, by the way.
Okay.
So I got that wrong earlier.
So, yeah. So we're getting a little bit more of a background. I don't have a quick quote yeah. from this chapter, but basically my bistro brief is a quick quote.
Ooh.
Because there was so much food.
Please, read it to me.
maybe I should have added this to the list of French words. amuse-bouche of local caribou.
Amuse-bouche.
Escargots. Lille. Basically snails.
No, escargot, no S.
Uh-huh.
We just learned that rule.
Yeah, that's snails. Lille? I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe with butter.
Okay.
I have no idea. Seared duck breast with confit of wild ginger. That sounds really good.
That sounds really good.
Oh, confit with wild ginger, mandarin, and kumquat.
Oh, that's even better.
And then fresh roquette with shaved parmesan.
What's a roquette?
I think that's a mushroom.
Oh, sounds so good.
And then organic salmon with sorrel yogurt. That's the dish that I still want to make.
Yes.
But I have to go to Central Market for the sorrel. And then for dessert, because they can't stop themselves, the options were mint ice cream on an éclair with creamy dark chocolate, pudding, there was a French word for this, but I looked some of it up, a pudding with a maple syrup whipped cream, I believe. Sounds amazing.
I made a maple syrup whipped cream once.
I feel like I was...
Were you there?
The cookies. You made like a whipped cream, or the frosting, maple syrup
frosting.
Yeah.
But did you that was a buttercream.
Yeah.
Maybe I just made a buttercream. Because, okay, I made an Irish stout cake.
Ooh.
But maybe I didn't have maple syrup in the whipped cream. Maybe it was coffee.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it was just the buttercream.
Okay. Gotcha.
Either way.
Amazing.
Delicious.
And then they had the cheese cart.
Well, please tell me about the cheese cart.
Well, they didn't describe it, but this is what they had. Oh. Is what we have.
We're having a cheese cart.
And then they have coffee and cognac.
Okay, but can we have a cart of cheese, please, next time, Emily? This is just a plate.
Yes, I will. I will do better and bring an entire cart with me.
Oh, wow. So that was a meal, huh?
That was a meal.
Mm-hmm. Was that just the Gamaches eating this, or who was eating this?
Just the Gamaches.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Just them. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yep. Some of it was like appetizer, dinner, the side.
Right.
Dessert.
Mm-hmm. All right. When are we going?
Anytime.
Okay. All right. Shall we move on to chapter two?
Yeah.
Okay. So the chapter starts with Pierre. That's the maitre d'.
Mm-hmm.
Walking in on Elliot, who is the young worker. Mm-hmm. And he's basically imitating Sandra, and all the other staff are cracking up. because we all know she sucks, right? Mm-hmm. But Pierre gets, like, really, really mad, and he's talking in his head to us, the reader, basically. And it just is kind of letting us know how much he hates this young kid.
Sure.
Like, he's been the maitre d' for so long. Mm-hmm. Like, he's also, like, in his 60s or 50s and has been doing this basically his whole life. And he's never, like, had a kid that's been so not listening to his rules, essentially. But he can't explain exactly why Elliot just brings out the worst in him. But he's young, he's disrespectful, and he just, like, Pierre confides in the chef about his feelings about Elliot. And then the Gamaches are playing cards with Thomas mm-hmm. and Sandra, which they do, like, every night. And it's, like, the loveliest room ever.
Yes.
Don't you want to be there? Oh. Okay. They're chatting about, like, each other's upbringings, and Irene tells them about their other son, Spot, and his wife, Claire, again. They're going to be joining them soon. And you just, yeah, you just get this weird feeling. Okay. And then, Mariana, mm-hmm. one of the daughters, is looking around the room. So she's not, like, she doesn't really engage as much, I feel like. She's kind of on the outskirts. But she notices how Pierre treats Julia. I don't know where I got Julia from, but I kept writing Julia.
Sounds French.
So yeah. She notices that Pierre treats Julia differently. And in her mind, she's like, oh, I'm just the fun girl. People always think I'm the fun girl next door, but Julia is the one that everyone wants to marry. So there's mm-hmm. some jealousy going on, mm-hmm. I think. And also just a demonstration of how different they are and what sure. how people's perceptions of them are different. Mm-hmm. And that's really all that happens. I mean, everyone's just on vacation, enjoying yeah. themselves.
I will say mm-hmm. that first scene where Pierre goes into the kitchen, like, I understand that frustration, you know, like, I wonder if it'd be different if he was not in the leadership kind of managerial position, mm-hmm. but
well,
he just takes his job, like, understandably, he takes his job so seriously, and I don't feel like that kid is really listening to him or taking it seriously, and that can be really frustrating.
No, and, like, in this type of job, you just can't mess around like that, because right. if someone overhears you, like, your job is to treat these people how they want to be treated. Mm-hmm. Like, your job is to do everything for them. That's why they come here. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's shitty, but that is what the job is.
Right.
And it's this guy's responsibility to make sure all these younger kids are, like, in line. And it's just like, why won't he listen?
Yeah. Ugh, so frustrating.
Why?
So dumb little kid.
Yes. Yeah. So I get his frustrations for sure. Okay. Here's two quick quotes. First, I just loved it so much, is that Bean, she's, again, a 10-year-old kid. I said she, but we actually don't know the gender of the child, which we'll talk about a little bit more later when it gets explained. But I also said she because she was a she in the TV show. But anyway. True. Bean asks if they can have a martini before bed. Because, like, she just, like, wants to be involved in, right. I think, all of the family things. And then Mariana goes, you know you're not allowed until you're 12. And it'll be scotch or nothing. So it's like, no, you can't have it. You're 10. But when you're 12, you'll have a scotch. I just love their little relationship. Like, I think as we read on, you'll see... I think they have a great bond,
I agree.
I think she's a good mother.
I agree.
And there might be some things that make you think otherwise, but I like their connection. Okay, so on page 40 to 41, there's a lovely description of the room.
And I want not the room, as in the book, the room.
Yes.
A room.
A room. The room is lined with books, broken only by the huge river rock fireplace and the wall of French doors looking into the darkness. They were open to catch what little breeze the hot Quebec evening had to offer, which wasn't much. What it did offer was a constant trill of calls from the wild. Worn oriental carpets were scattered about the old pine floor, and comfortable chairs and sofas were grouped together for intimate conversations or a private read. Mm-hmm. Arrangements of fresh flowers were placed here and there. The manoir Bellechasse managed to be both rustic and refined. Rough hewn? How do you say that word?
Hewn?
hewn logs on the outside and fine crystal within. So, yeah, I like that the mixture of, like, totally rustic and completely elegant and fancy.
Agreed.
And I want to be there. So bad. So, for our bistro brief, again, we're all on vacation, just chilling, drinking. We have cognac at the beautiful window, the one that they recreated so well on the Three Pines show. Remember the window? Yeah, you brought it up, I think.
Yeah.
So, it was described in the book. And they're just, the Gamaches are sitting there drinking their cognac, looking out the window.
Sounds really nice.
And they had handmade truffles and chocolate-dipped candied fruit by Chef Veronique, which is what inspired me to make some chocolate-covered strawberries and get some French-ass truffles.
Oh, the truffles are really good.
Oh, crap. They are
so really are the, the chocolate strawberries.
Okay. So that's that for chapter three. my turn to eat. Your turn to talk.
Perfect. I really like chapter four. So for me, this was a fun chapter. I feel like Louise Penny took the front off of a dollhouse or like an apartment building and just like showed what everybody was doing in their own room.
Oh, that's fun.
Just kind of like an observer.
Like, what were you doing? What were you doing? Ooh, tell me about it.
So, so she took off the front of the dollhouse so you could like peer into everyone's rooms and like see their deep insecurities. Gamache and Rent-Marie went back to their room, and it seems like they went to sleep very easily. The only people, I think, in the entire
hotel,
who could actually sleep. We find out that Mariana has a child who is absolutely obsessed with alarm clocks. And there's way too many alarm clocks of all sorts of shapes, sizes, whatever, in their room. And they all go off at 7
That's
o'clock.
That's kind of terrifying.
Horrifying.
I don't like that at all.
No.
First of all, I don't like clocks. I don't know if you know that, but I don't like when they click. That is super irritating.
You don't like the clicking
noise. I hate the clicking noise. Drives me absolutely insane. And then I also don't like the light being, like if you have a digital clock and that being on all night, I don't care whether it's blue or red or whatever. I don't care what color it is. Mm-hmm. It bothers me and I can't sleep.
I understand.
So I hate all clocks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, that would be your absolute nightmare then.
Especially all of those alarms going off.
And then Mariana also engages in some, she has some anxious thoughts, and that she copes with those with some magical thinking. Like just kind of imagine something magical happening to make the thoughts go away. So a coping strategy of some sort. Yeah. Julia, she's in her room, and she's concerned about how she is perceived by everyone else, and that she must always look like the perfect lady, and that she has to put everyone at ease at all times. So she has like a perfect demeanor to her, and is a people pleaser. Thomas, he's struggling with his marriage. So Thomas and Sandra, Thomas is struggling with his marriage, as well as insecurities regarding the wear on his jacket. So his jacket, has like a little bit of fraying
from the cufflinks,
something along that, and so he is just hoping that nobody notices that he's not wearing a new jacket. So obviously there's some a little bit of financial struggle
issue, but they're like rich,
correct? Supposedly. So the fact that he has some wear on the cuffs is,
he doesn't want anyone to notice that.
No. And Pierre, he knows he was groomed to be the perfect maître d', but hopes that he can still make his father proud. So he was raised to be like the perfect person to serve people, but something, I don't think he got a lot of attention from his father, or maybe he did. I think he had a loving father, but just wanted to make him proud. Sandra, Thomas's wife.
I would like to know what goes on in her mind.
Yeah, she has a ton of insecurities. So she said
she
starved herself in order to look perfect for the family. So she like lost 15 pounds just for this like family retreat.
Oh, God.
But she's actually just starving for his touch.
Oh, no.
I know. So sad.
Oh.
She just wants love. But she's, and I can't, like, yeah, if you don't eat, you're going to be very grumpy. Yeah. And she also, yeah, was very, like, very concerned about, like, all of the food that was going around and, like, people who were being served before her. Yeah, she's very much.
Well, she, yeah, that would put her on edge if she's also, like, if she has, like, an eating disorder, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? That
yes.
would definitely influence like, how you're behavior.
If I could not eat any of this cheese right now or another chocolate, yeah. I would also be very grumpy.
I wouldn't invite you over. I wouldn't do that to you.
Thank you. And then, oh, and then, yeah, what is happening with Irene Finney?
Oh, is that what I said?
I don't know. Finney?
I just said Finney because it has two N's, but.
That makes sense.
I don't know.
Finney. But, so, when we're looking into her room, her husband, Bert, is lying in bed, listening to her stifled sobs while she removes her face. So, her face of makeup.
Why is she sobbing?
Yeah, we don't know. The stifled sobs.
Oh, wow.
We don't know what's going on with her, but something's happening.
Stifled. And her face.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Taking off her makeup. And then, what is also, there's this large square marble thing in the middle of the garden that right. has just, like, mysteriously appeared. So there's a lot of questions that are happening. Yeah. Like, why is everybody kind of miserable, have some kind of, you know, mental health issue that's happening, except for Armand Gamache and Red Murray. They are sleeping just fine. So in the morning after this whole night of adventure, at breakfast, Bean, she's reading the obituary of the newspaper while Bert is reading the comic, so a little juxtapose.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, reading the obituary?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then Bean is concerned that more people are dying than being born. So.
Is that true?
I think it might be.
I mean, this book was written a while ago, but I'm not concerned about that.
There's some parts of the world where there's more people dying than being born.
Because, like, why do we have to build community, waterfront communities in Texas if there weren't too many people on this planet?
Mm. Well, there's people and there's people that want bigger homes. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So then, so we're getting into a little bit of the mystery. So Ren Marie turns to Gamache and asks him, is Bean a boy or a girl? And we don't get an answer.
No.
We don't know. Bean is just Bean.
Yeah,
Bean's just Bean. And then Gamache asks Pierre what the marble slab is, and Pierre says that they will have to talk with Madame Dubois because it is a prize.
Oh, dang. The marble slab is a surprise?
Yep.
Oh, dang. What's it going to be?
What is it? So bistro brief. We're not at the bistro, but it's still the brief about food. So, of course, they have breakfast. And they have wild blueberry crepe, eggs benedict, croissant, and jam.
Yeah. Wow, something about wild blueberries sounds really good. Moving right along. You eat, but you only have a couple seconds because this is the shortest chapter of all time.
Okay.
Literally nothing happens. Okay, so for our weekly investigative report, chapter 5, finally, it's the day.
Yeah.
Spot and Claire are arriving. And the Gamaches are like, they know their peace and quiet is coming to an end, right? And then, ... guess what? Spot and Claire are actually Peter and Clara Morrow.
Yes.
Which you definitely wouldn't have predicted if you hadn't read this book before. It's just really funny. So it's so upsetting how they treat Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Or Clara, however you want to say her name.
Right.
They don't even call her the right name. They refuse. They're like, they think her name is Claire. Like, they literally think her name is Claire, but it's actually Clara.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're horrible.
They basically treat her as if she's not even there. And at one point, Peter is telling his family about Clara's showing at the 14 Gallery, which is a huge deal. If that happened at the end of last book, remember she was preparing the painting for Dennis 14 to come. And, like, she thinks that they're saying how delighted they are, but they're actually talking about the sandwiches.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, delightful, eating their sandwiches.
They're just horrible people.
They're really terrible. And, like, Peter comes from this family, and it is – I was so excited to announce that it was Peter because this book really gives us a glimpse into why he is the way he is. Right. I think he's not shown in the best of lights in the first three books. Mm-mm. You just know something's up with him, right. And you're
it's
like,
all of his, like, deep insecurities.
Yeah. Why do I always do this? Yeah, so he has pretty deep insecurities, and he takes it out, like, on other people when he shouldn't, you know what I mean?
Right.
And there's, like, a little tiff between Clara and Peter because she's, like, thought he was telling them just to, like, get... it wasn't for her benefit. It was for his own benefit, essentially. Yeah. Yeah. And she felt he was using her.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's literally all that happens is that we just get introduced. And the Gamaches are, like, nearby. Because it's a very small hotel, right? Like, they're just, everyone that's staying there is together.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nearby and they're listening. And they're like, oh my God, that's Peter and Clara. We have to go talk to them. And they're hearing, like, this weird interaction, how shitty they're being. So they interrupt and they're like, congratulations, Clara. This is huge. And they're just, like, talking up how big it is for her and how important it is to, like, show that this is major, and they literally should be saying how delightful this is.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, they're cute. So they discuss why they're there and how they're related, and then they leave Spot and Claire to be with their family. And that's the end of the chapter.
What I also love about that is because I think in one of the earlier chapters, like, one of the family members was speaking a bit disparagingly about Renmarie and Gamache, and, like, you know, he's just, like, a servant person, and her mother was a housemaid, and so much looking down their nose at them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I love the fact that they just come up and, like, greeted Peter and Clara so warmly, and they got the same response. I was like, ha-ha!
Suckers!
Yes, you don't get warm responses, people, because you're just terrible people.
Yep. Do you have more to say?
No, but I can, I think I'm...
No, you can't read my quote. It's my favorite quote of all time.
Okay. Okay.
You can read it. It's so good.
No.
I'm sorry, guys. I really couldn't resist taking that bite of that cheese and that cracker, but now I have food in my mouth.
Which one did you have? Did you have the goat cheese and fig?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, I did. Oh. I actually had the goat cheese and fig, and then I added a piece of cheddar to it.
Oh, nice.
And then I had a cracker. Okay, here's my favorite quick quote of all time, because this is such a good idea and I'm going to use this in the future.
Yeah.
And I don't know where, who says this, or no, it was Clara, obviously. I don't know why they were talking about children, but probably because Bean was there.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes, Louise Penny writes, Clara, who got along with children by pretending they were puppies, ...
It's so good.
And I was like, I think I've noticed myself talking to kids, like, similarly to how I would talk to my dog. Because that's really all I know. Like, I just don't interact with kids anymore. I used to, but I'm so out of the game. But that's such a good strategy.
Yeah. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, good. Good girl.
Do you want this toy?
Yeah,
do you
want a treat? You want a snack? Uh-oh. Somebody wants a snack now. Will you eat another strawberry? Denied. Only when you get it.
Yes.
That's not accepted. No. Absolutely not.
Ha.
Ha. Oh. Are you kidding me?
Guys.
Riley, you might even just take her home with you at this point. Riley loves Emmy. Emmy is her bestest friend in the whole wide world.
Which one was
and so, Riley doesn't really like a lot of fruits.
Okay.
She loves watermelons, like her favorite thing ever, but she doesn't really eat any other fruits or vegetables. She'll eat a carrot. So, anyway, earlier, Emily pretended a piece of strawberry was a treat, and... Mm-hmm. She ate that shit, and I've never gotten her to eat one, any type of berries or anything. And right now, I just tried to give her one. She denied it. She didn't want it. 2 seconds later, Emily gives it to her, and she eats two pieces.
Loves it.
What the hell?
What did you do with strawberries to her?
Maybe she has some negative association with you and strawberries.
What the hell, Riley? I ain't ever giving you a treat again.
Oh, no. Yeah, you will.
Okay. So, anyway, puppies. Okay, so there was a little bit of food while they're out in the hot sun. This sounds so refreshing for, like, a nice lunch is, like, a tomato or a cucumber sandwich. Mm-hmm. Just, like, light and fresh, watery, you know, nothing heavy. Mm-hmm. And a beer and mm-hmm. some gin and tonics in the blinding sun. It's, like, very descriptive how hot and humid it is.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Although I wonder how hot and humid it is.
I know.
Would we feel like it's a beautiful day?
Now we have a beggar over here. Excuse me. We got a stage. What is it? Stage 4.
Clinger.
Clinger. But beggar. That's a good question. So, right in New Jersey and New York State, like, it gets pretty humid in the summer there. It's just that it's humid here for much longer. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it would probably be, like, one of our humid days. But right. It's not as hot. There's no way it's 100 degrees.
Mm. But they also don't have any air conditioning.
They have no air conditioning. That's right. Ridiculous. I can't even fathom it anymore after living in the South for 10 years.
So there really isn't any kind of reprieve.
Absolutely, other than the pool. Mm-hmm. Which you have to constantly be in.
Yep.
That's how it's like here. Like, you can't even go outside if you're not in the pool. But a G&T, we were going to try to have those two.
I tried so hard.
Oh, Emily. We were talking about doing this earlier.
Everything else.
She did.
Even the lemon for the G&T.
No. Yeah, so we're going to have gin and tonics. And I had the gin and, you know, some other stuff and Emily was going to bring over this liter of tonic that she's been hoarding probably for years and never opening.
Probably like 2 years.
Yeah.
As long as I've been in that apartment.
Yeah. But, you know, you always have those and you never open them. And then, or even if you do open it and then you have like one beverage or two beverages and you have like over half of a liter just sitting there in your fridge forever.
So maybe my memory or my future intentions blocked it out. Because last night when I did pull it out, it didn't really look very bubbly. And I think I had this slight fear that I was going to bring it over and it was just going to be flat tonic water.
Yes.
Because it had sat in my cupboard for so long.
I mean, it's possible, but it ended up with us having this nice Pinot Noir.
Yep.
So we don't mind. And also, it's not very hot right now, so we didn't really need G&Ts in the blinding sun. It's actually
too cold.
It's too cold right now for Houston. So that is the end of chapter 5.
Oh, okay. Chapter 6.
Tell me about it.
Clara is literally counting down the hours until she and Peter can leave.
No, she is.
Yeah.
She's
there's like 48 hours, however long. 48 hours, they have 8 hours of which they're going to be sleeping, 3 hours in which they're going to be eating. So that leaves whatever, how many hours left to actually interact with the family. But yeah, she's in major countdown mode. And then she, speaking up against Peter, she confronts him as to why he told his family about her solo art show, because she's just mad. And that she says she knows he told them just to get under their skin, and that hurt her. So he was using her as a pawn. Yep. Which then, because of their remarks, also, like, added, like, salt to the wound, that they were just so dismissive.
Right.
Of it, that,
aww.
Yeah.
Clara.
Yep.
She doesn't deserve it.
No.
Although I feel like if it were like me and Troy, like we would conspire together, be like, yeah, let's show them up, tell them about this, whatever. You know what I mean? Like we would work together on it.
Right. But I wonder, we haven't found out yet how, like we did find that Peter thought that her work, the Mary Ruth, Mary picture was extraordinary, but we haven't heard yet whether or not Peter is happy for her about the art gallery. So Peter may not have even like expressed, knowing Peter, may not have expressed like how proud he is of her. So if this was the first time that he's kind of bragging, then that also
it's an
extra hurt. Yeah. We find out what the marble cube is for.
Please tell me.
In this chapter.
AKA the murder stone?
The murder stone.
By the way, the other name for this book is the murder stone.
That makes so much more sense.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the murder stone is now the future home for a statue of the late Charles Morrow, and the family reunion is meant to honor him.
Yeah. Is this where we find out? So, like, I think the Gamaches thought that Thomas and Sandra's last name was Finney. They just assumed because Irene's last name was Finney.
Correct.
And then Julia Martin, we knew her last name was Martin, or Martine.
Martin.
Because she was remarried.
Right.
But then when Peter and Clara come, they're like, oh, they're not Finneys, they're Morrows, because Bert is the only real, well, the only blood Finney.
I love how she describes Bert.
Oh.
It's just like the ugliest man that makes him handsome alive.
I don't understand
that. I don't understand it either, but...
He sounds foul.
He does, but maybe it's just like... He has so much character.
Yeah.
And I also feel like he is, like, you can tell he's not an original member of that family. Like, he seems to have kind of, like, a kindness to him.
That they're all locking him.
Yeah.
The warmth.
Yep.
Yeah.
So maybe compared to everybody else's, you know, disgusting nature.
It's that, it's more that is what's on side that matters. On side. Wow. Inside. On side. Inside that matters, right? He is hideous. He's so ugly. He's disgusting.
According to the book.
According to the book, yeah. That's how she describes him.
Right.
But he has this thing about him, and I'm assuming it's because he's not as disgusting on the inside.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So then we also get caught up in the life of Peter and Clara and learn that Dennis Fortin came and looked at her art. He then brought back others with him to also look at the art. And another side note. So there's another note in here that says that Clara is 48.
Yes. So that's how old she is now.
But wasn't in the other book that she was in her 50s?
Well, 48 is basically 50s. That's so close. I wouldn't bother with that.
And then in the first book, she was in her 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the 48-50 makes sense because the oldest brother, Thomas and Sandra, they're like 60.
Right.
And he's the oldest, so it makes sense. And Peter's a little older than Clara, so he's in his 50s. And Clara's now 48, apparently.
Right.
I know.
It's fine. I mean, Clara is just, you know, she's timeless. It doesn't matter. She could be anywhere from 35 to 55.
She is timeless.
Yes.
She could even be 65.
Correct. And also I was thinking about this, too, when that age thing popped up again, because I have no idea how old Clara is. Maybe the next book she's in her 25.
We'll see.
Who knows? But what if the first book took place like 12 years ago?
Yeah,
in the Louise Penny universe.
We don't know how long has passed.
I mean, in our mind, it's like every year there's a murder, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's like
several
every
years.
Yeah.
Let's believe that. Between book one and now, it's been like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
She was in her 30s and now she's 48. It was like 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Mystery solved.
Yep. And then that makes me feel better about Three Pines, that there isn't a murder happening every single year. Yeah.
So good.
Okay. Gamache speaks to Peter a little bit and states the awkwardly obvious fact that Clara is moving up in the world, and he says to Peter, it's understandable if you feel a little bit off about that. Peter doesn't have too much to say about that. But
no, he wouldn't. Yeah. Gamache, especially not to Gamache.
No, he calls out the elephant in the room that you may be feeling this. We also learn that Peter was not extremely fond of his father, and we also find out why his siblings call him Spot. I, of course, thought it was because he had pimples, because that makes sense.
I mean, yeah, everyone does when they're a kid,
or when you're 39.
People have it for their whole lives.
Happens. Yeah. Skin. But no, he actually, so he was always painting as a kid, and he would have little paint spots on him, and so his siblings picked on him about that and would call him Spot.
Yeah, but he's an extremely successful, talented artist, and he shouldn't let it bother him anymore.
Oh, be a grown man, be an adult with mature emotions and thoughts.
Not,
it's too much to ask.
Not for him.
Nope. And then we found another nickname.
Yes.
Mariana. And she is nicknamed Magilla the Gorilla.
Magilla Gorilla.
After a show she used to watch.
I wonder why. Did they say why?
I think because it was her favorite show. She loved it. Yeah. And so her siblings would just call her Magilla Gorilla.
That's fine. That's not a bad nickname,
though. Yeah. And then there's this, you know, Gamache coming to the rescue. So there's an interesting scene in this chapter where Bean comes running out of the garden, screaming bloody murder. And some of the family members are concerned, like, what's happening? And Gamache, because he's used to crises, so he goes right over to Bean. He's like, what's going on? Oh, because Colleen, the gardener, comes out.
She is the gardener.
Yeah. And so Gamache wants to know, was a little... It's a duty to report. I'm sure there's those things up in Canada.
Sure.
So he needs to find out if she was hurt by her.
Yeah.
By Colleen. And at first the Morrow Finney family are like, no, don't touch her. And then they start bickering amongst themselves and completely ignore the fact that Bean has a few different wasp stings in her. And Gamache is checking to see if she has an allergic reaction.
Right, right.
And is like pulling out the stingers to stop the poison going in.
Aww.
So yeah, so he takes over for Bean while the family just bickers with each other. Oh, it's terrible.
God, the worst.
Oh, and then the saddest part, now that wasn't even the saddest part, the saddest part of the book is when the whole Morrow family, they get into a boat, including Peter, but then they leave Clara and Bert on the dock because there's no more seats.
I
literally
know.
The worst humans.
It's so weird. And it wasn't like, hey, we need to have some private family time, blah, blah, blah. It was just like, all right, everyone, we're all going boating. Mm-hmm. And then everyone was prepared to go. And then they're just like, oh, we ran out of room. See ya.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know you and I would be the type of people that's, if there's not room for a significant other, we wouldn't get on the boat.
We'd figure something out.
Yeah.
We'd get another boat and go side by side.
Correct.
Like, I would never just leave someone awkwardly behind unless it was previously discussed. Like, oh, I'm going to stay home so you guys can go together.
Right. Or at least make even, like, the gesture that you care
that
they're being left
like,
behind.
Like, oh, I'll stay back with you. Yeah. And then you say, oh, no, actually, I don't care. You go without me.
Right.
But he just was like,
nope.
See ya.
Looks at her awkwardly and gets into the boat.
It was so cringy. It was hard to read. It really was.
Yeah. It's, you know, in the beginning, the first book, Louise Penny really tries to paint the picture that Clara and Peter have this really beautiful relationship and that they somehow complete each other.
Yeah.
But it's hard to see, like, what Peter does for Clara.
Right.
I don't, like, I wonder if, like, for her, Peter is just this ideal human who she just is not. And so... It's a sense of, like, I can't believe I'm with somebody who's so perfect.
Yeah.
But it is kind of hard to see how they've made it this long.
Yeah.
With him being very emotionally stunted.
Yeah, he doesn't bring a lot to the table, in my opinion. So I think that's actually a really good observation, though. Like, she feels... like, kind of attracted to someone that's more of the opposite of her, right? Because she's a mess.
Yeah. In a wonderful, beautiful creative
mess.
Way. Yeah.
No, exactly.
Right.
She's like a human, and he's like a robot.
Yes.
I don't understand it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, Peter is just racking up the the insults against her.
Okay, but compared to the rest of his family?
He's better. He is better.
Yeah.
And then, for the quick quote corner... Clara, she makes this comment. Why did I write this one? So, over. So, well, I think, okay. So, this is where, in the part of the chapter where she was hoping that Peter was going to maybe just leave the party because of, like, the insult of what the family did. And so she had this whole kind of image made up in her mind about this is how it was going to go. Mm-hmm. And so when that didn't happen, this is what she's kind of saying to herself. Even over lunch, she'd known he couldn't do it. Still, it had been fun to pretend, like playing, can't speak today, like playing emotional dress-up, pretending to be the brave one this time. Mm. But I thought that was kind of a nice, I don't know, I liked playing emotional dress-up.
I know.
You know, like you kind of put on that,
you put on a that face. Front.
Yeah. Or you fake it till you make it.
Everyone has to do that at some point.
Yep.
And I like calling it emotional dress-up because that sounds way more fun.
It does.
Right?
Yep.
Because,
yep.
like, dressing up
I'll put on a fancy dress if I feel like, you know, even if I'm not a fancy dress
person. Put on those glasses?
Yeah.
Look exactly. smart?
Exactly.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Put on a brave face when you don't feel like being brave. Yeah.
And there's actually a lot to be said for doing that, too. I mean, I think it can help.
Yeah.
Some people be more brave.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You do it enough times and you're like, oh, that's not so scary.
Right.
And then Bert's comment after Clara and Bert are left behind in the dock. And he just frankly says, not everyone makes the boat.
I mean, that is like so perfect coming out of the mouth of a 90-year-old. Like, you've lived so much life. You've learned so many lessons. Mm-hmm. You've been in all of the situations and you just know, sometimes I don't make the boat.
Nope. You die in the Titanic.
Sometimes you don't make the raft or whatever, the door raft, and you die in the freezing ice water, even though Rose totally could have had you join,
supposedly. Yeah. It's enough room there. Yeah.
You know, there's, like, been a lot of drama about that specifically lately.
Yeah.
People are, like, arguing that he could have fit on the door or whatever. Was it a door?
I have no idea. A piece of wood.
It was a piece of wood, at least. And, like, James Cameron is the director who is, like, known for, you know, being an insanely good director and, like, thinking about all the details. And it's just, like, how can he miss, like, a detail that's so obvious that this guy could have fit on the on this raft? Like, why did they make it smaller or whatever, make it more believable? And I think he was, like, insisting that, you know, he couldn't have fit. They would have sunk. Okay. Why are we talking about this so late?
Like, because not everyone makes the boat.
Not everyone. Sorry, Jack.
Nope. Not everyone makes the piece of wood.
You weren't good enough. And I'm just kidding. I love you forever.
And there was no food.
No. So, this is our last chapter. It's like one sentence long. And this is so short. So here's our last chapter. Chapter 7. So Bert and Clara are obviously left behind. And they hang out with the Gamaches until the rest of the family comes back from their little boating trip. Clara is very upset with Peter for not standing up for her. And, like, making them allow her to come with them or staying behind with her. And he does not know how to apologize. And that's the whole chapter.
No. Yeah. He messed up.
He's just so stupid. Just get over yourself and apologize. It's not that hard.
No. As we know, words of wisdom from Gamash.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I need help.
Just say it. Just say it. Mm-hmm. Just understand that people can be hurt by things that you do, even if you don't mean to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, because it's how it's perceived that matters, which sucks. I get it. Yep. It's very hard to say I'm sorry, but just do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's the end. There were no quotes. It was a very short chapter, and there was definitely no food, so we are done with our first episode of our fourth season. We're crushing it.
We are.
I'm really excited to read more of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So for our bookend section, in case y'all need some more reading suggestions, what have you been reading, Emily?
I am currently reading 4 different books. Too many. But
why at the same time?
So, I think I'm in this, like, anxious, I need to consume all of these books because I'm in board exam study mode. And I just feel like I just need to constantly keep my brain active. But I started the Stardust book. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. That's, like, on hold for a little while.
Okay.
I am reading, and you're going to talk about this one with Daisy Jones and the Six, listening to our other book club book, the...
Oh, gosh. Oh. The Half of a Yellow Sun?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, listening to that one.
You're listening to it?
Yes.
How far are you?
25% in. Okay. But the one that I will talk about is... Do you remember the one time that I talked about the... Hold.
The Nora Roberts?
Nope. Oh, that one. Oh, let me just make an announcement about that. The Nora Roberts book that I talked very much about. Really loved the first book.
Yeah.
Second book, I was like, I'm excited still. I need to know how it ends. Third book, just strap yourself in for half of a book that you don't care anything about. It's just taking you into, like, if you're in a game and you're in a world building game,
you're just
and people need to collect chickens and clothing items, that's what happens for 50% of this
book. It's like you're on a Zelda quest.
Yeah.
Where you have to talk to every person in the village to get your thing that you need, and it takes forever.
Correct.
And it's part of the process, but you didn't really need to do it. Got it.
No, she could have easily cut out 50% of that book and still made it great and lengthy enough.
But did you end up liking the story in the end?
Yeah. I did. Like,
I'm going to have to finish it anyway, no matter what. So.
Right. I needed to know what happened, but it was like a 700-something-odd, like,
what?
Like flip turn on the phone. The last 200 flips were what I wanted.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so the one that I am excited about is also on hold for a minute is the Henrik Groen.
Yes.
So it's the sequel to... his The Secret Diary of Henrik Groen, 83 and a quarter years old. So this book is called On the Bright Side. He's now 85 years old. And it is still just as darling and cute. And I'm also kind of... I feel like I need to do a little bit more research into this because part of me feels like it's either a ghostwriter or it's an actual person who wrote...
You've never looked it up.
Well, I thought I did, but then I don't know if it's just like this story and this lore going on about Henrik Groen and that his diary was published or something. But no, I think it's fiction.
It's probably just fiction. But okay, so that this is the second book.
This is the second one.
And how many are there?
Maybe it's, there's three.
Okay. And you started it?
Mm-hmm. I love it.
And you love it. Okay. I know I need to read it.
Because I read the other. And I bought all of them. So I have hard copies for when you're ready.
Yay! All right. So, okay. So those are all your books. The one that I was going to suggest is also one that Emily started, is Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid. How far into it are you?
I'm close to 200 pages
in. And this is one that you got the hardcover of, right? Okay, good. So Emily's reading, like, the hard copy. I listened to the audiobook and I finished it. I'm conflicted in terms of my recommendation for whether you should read it hard copy or listen to it. Because at first I was really upset listening to it because there's a lot of characters and there's a different voice for each character. Which is amazing.
Sure.
Like, it gets you so into it, and you really just feel like you're watching a documentary about a real band in real life, but just without the visuals.
Right.
So you're, like, you're hearing their voices. You're getting so into the feel of being in a rock band and everything. But in the audiobook, they don't introduce their name before they start talking every time.
Oh, no.
Like, they only did it. They did it every once in a while, or maybe, like, if they hadn't talked in a while, I guess it would be, like, a reminder of who's talking. And I guess it would take you out of it if they, like, constantly were like, Heather. And, yeah, so Daisy was blah, blah, blah. Like, if you said your name every time. But that meant, like, at first I had no idea who was talking.
Sure.
Because they did it upon their first introduction, but then not every other time. So... I'm conflicted because it did confuse me at first, but then after a while, I really did start to understand whose voice was whose. Like, the girls were really distinctive, but some of those men, they just sounded all the same. But it was fine, because then once you get to know the characters, you know sure. who's talking.
Sure.
But, it was really an immersive experience, and I really liked it, so I do kind of want to suggest the audiobook. But if you think that would bother you, then do the hardcover.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the physical book, it's really easy to read, because there's so much space in between all of the different paragraphs.
It's only dialogue, essentially. Right.
Yeah. So it is going by pretty quickly. But even I, when people are talking, I have to sometimes sit back and be like, wait, who is that person? Even though I can see the name clearly.
Right.
If they haven't been talked about in a while. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting experience. And it's such a different book because it's written like as if everyone's getting an interview. It's not really in like paragraph form, but it still really tells a very cohesive story start to finish. Like, chronologically, like it's not like what you would think. It's not bad. It's really, really good, actually. Yeah. At first, I was like, yeah, I like this, whatever. By the end, loved it.
Yeah. Can I also say, too, that when I first started reading it, I thought it was about a real band.
Real
people.
Yeah.
And I was Googling.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I want to know what this person looks like. Yeah. And I was like, why can I only find Daisy Jones and the Six? Like, where's the actual people?
Yeah. So I read one line somewhere that said it was very loosely inspired by,
Janis Joplin?
No.
No, the Fleetwood Mac?
Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. But I don't know how much that means, like, whatever. It's completely fictional. But then also, very quick side note, for people who haven't read Taylor Jenkins Reid's books yet, there are four of them, and there is a chronological order to them. You don't necessarily have to read it in that order, but some of the characters show up in some books later on. As far as I understand, it's not that big of a deal, but you might want to read them in order. So the order is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, Daisy Jones and the Six, Malibu Rising, and Carrie Soto is back. So, in case you don't want to ruin your life like Emily did, she hasn't read Evelyn yet, so
no.
come join. We're almost done. And, so read them in that order if you haven't started yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although, I read Malibu Rising, and it's really hard for me to see how reading other books will potentially add or subtract to that.
Okay, yeah, and it might not. Like I said, I think it could even just be so minor, like a minor character in one is a bigger character.
Or they run into, like, a person.
They run into them, and it would just be cool to be like, oh, that's Evelyn, or whatever.
Right.
That's all. I think that's all it is. But I don't know, because I haven't read them all. I've only read two. And you've only read two.
Or one and a half.
One and a half. All right. So that's all for this week. Next week, we're going to be covering chapters 8 through 14, right? 8 through 14. That's seven chapters of A Rule Against Murder by Louise Penny. And don't forget Armand's words of wisdom.
I don't know.
That's you, Emily.
Yep. I need help, always. I'm sorry.
I was wrong.
Yeah. Woo! Guest speaker! Troy in the house.
Husband coming in with the I was wrong at the end.
He just wanted snacks. And yes, he's wrong. Goodbye.
Bye.
This podcast was recorded and edited by Emily and Heather. Our music is by Robert Sellis.